I'm Carson Sestouli of Fangraphs.com, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, brought to you by Homestand Sports. Yes, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. I am Carson Sestouli, one of the hosts. With me is not Dave Cameron. He is absent from the program for reasons I will mention momentarily. With me is Travis Sochik, who, for reasons I will mention momentarily, is probably more qualified than Dave Cameron, or at least easier to like. Travis Sochik, are you present here?
I am present.
Okay, very good.
I hope to prove to be a capable replacement.
Right. All right. That's good. So let me explain a couple things, and then I will bring a message from our patrons momentarily, which is something that I am privileged and obligated to do simultaneously. Dave Cameron, you're familiar with Dave Cameron. Now, of course, last year, Kevin Kennedy, who is the who is in charge, he is the owner-operator of the Pitch Talks events, to the best of my knowledge, he asked Cameron and I to do this weekly program so we might bring some manner of objectivity to Blue Jays analysis, which is not to say that there are not already people doing great work about it. However, we really have no vested interest. That's the point. Okay? As you know, Travis Sochik, and which perhaps listeners do not know, Dave Cameron is unable to make this recording or any others because he has been swept up by one of the 30 major league teams. In particular, he was hired to help build out, is how he explained it, to help build out the research and development department of the San Diego Padres. And so he is not able to join us. You're aware of this, obviously.
I am aware, yes.
You are aware. Okay.
Dave will not be a guest for quite some time, I imagine.
No, that's right. He is part of the even more private sector, is what it needs to be said. I guess Fangraphs is technically part of the private sector. However, Kevin Kennedy would like this sort of objective analysis that Fangraphs typically provides. Now, Travis Sochik is eminently qualified to provide this as well. Travis, would you care to provide a brief biography, which my guess is, because of your modest Midwestern upbringings, will not necessarily highlight any of your greatest achievements. So I will therefore punctuate it as you present it to listeners.
So I'll go through my resume. what's relevant to baseball coverage is that before coming to Fangraphs.com, I covered the Pirates in Major League Baseball for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for the 2013 through 2016 seasons. Then I came over to Fangraphs. And while I was on the Pirates beat, I was able to become acquainted with several Blue Jays of interest, namely Russell Martin and Jay Happ. So I know a few Blue Jays up close and personal. And I also wrote a modest book, Big Bad of Baseball, while I was covering the Pirates. And Russell Martin was something of a co-star. He played a large role in that book. So, those are basically my credentials to be here, I guess.
And now, you say he was a co-star. if it were the show My Two Dads, featuring Paul Reiser and then the cool dad, would he be more like Paul Reiser, who, you know, probably played a larger role, or to be more like the cool dad, do you think? Joey Mays.
He's definitely the cool dad.
He's the cool dad.
Yeah,
okay.
He's a hipster. You know, he's a foodie. He lived in the hipster neighborhood in Pittsburgh, and he like skateboarded at a ballpark, and he went to all the best restaurants.
This is all very interesting information. Yeah. Now, let us follow up on that momentarily. However,
one more credential item.
Okay.
I've been to Canada.
Okay, very good. Perhaps we will get to that momentarily.
In fact, from my home in Bay Village, Ohio, I believe if you were able to climb a tree or something, I could see across Lake Erie to Ontario.
So it's a province of interest for many of our listeners, which is also very good. Let me, however, state, as I said, Pitch Talks and its umbrella organization, umbrella entity, Homestand Sports they host a series of talks, of which Pitch Talks is one of those. It is, as I say, is both my privilege and my obligation to announce a brief calendar of events. In particular, there's one notable event coming up pertaining to baseball, and that is what is being characterized as a Mark Shapiro Town Hall. Mark Shapiro, of course, is, I believe, is officially titled as the president of the of the Toronto Blue Jays currently. This will take place. This event with Mark Shapiro will take place at the Royal Theater on College Street in Toronto, April 5th. April 5th, 7 to 10 p.m. 7 to 10 p.m. The Pitch Talks events. Now, have you attended a Pitch Talks event, Travis Hodgick?
I have.
How would you characterize a Pitch Talks event? Is it a boring slog, Travis Sachik? or if not, what are some qualities that make it the sort of thing that people to which people would dedicate a weekend or weekday night?
I would describe it's quite the opposite of a boring slog. It's a lively, intimate group discussion on baseball that centers loosely around the people on stage, right? They drive the conversation. But I was at the Pittsburgh Pitch Talks last year, I guess it was. And yeah, it's quite delightful. There's alcohol there if you choose to imbibe. And I assume that will also be the case on April 5th in Toronto. And yeah, just a bunch of dudes and gals sitting around talking about ball. I mean, it's very loose. It's
Yes, certainly...
It's infotaining.
Certainly the presence of adult beverages will add to that atmosphere. As I say, this will feature Mark Shapiro, also with Ashley Docking. Ashley Docking will appear there, as will the host of this current program, Carson Cistulli. That is me, Carson Cistulli. I will participate in it as well. And apparently I am somewhat responsible for facilitating conversation, asking questions, for example, of Mark Shapiro. Which will put me at a will make me nervous is what I mean to say. Make me nervous because I am unqualified for most endeavors, including this one. Okay,
you know, if I can renew my passport, I might also be there.
You might also be there. Okay. The so as I say, the Pitch Talks event, Royal Theater, April 5th. April 5th. Going to homestandsports.com, one can purchase tickets, which are available. For reasonable sum. They are available for reasonable sums across the board. All right. With that statement having now concluded, let us turn our attention to the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, here to begin with, and I will ask you about the Blue Jays offseason momentarily and their prospects for the 2018 campaign. However, what I would like to ask you about first is something to which you alluded previously, which is any sort of... information you might have, any sort of amusing anecdotes you might have about the players you covered while you were working as a beat reporter, while you were writing a book about the Pittsburgh Pirates as a resident of Pittsburgh. You said in particular Russell Martin, and also I don't know if you mentioned, but it is a point of fact that you also had the opportunity to I don't know if work with, but to cover Jay Happ while you were there.
Yes, I had a longer relationship with Russ Martin, but Jay Happ was also there for a short time as he was in the midst of rehabbing his career, and both left the Pirates to sign free agent deals with the Blue Jays. But yeah, Martin he's a really interesting guy. He's one of my favorite players I've ever covered, in large part because he's interesting. The Pirates, when they signed him after the... I guess it was the 2012 season. He was coming off a poor offensive season in New York, and the Pirates signed him to a 2-year, $17 million deal, which it was the largest external free agent signing in club history at the time, which seems kind of amazing. And since they haven't signed a free agent this offseason, maybe it still is. But yeah, they signed him because he was a pitch framer, and everyone knows about the value of pitch framing now, and that it's been quantified to a degree, and that teams value it. And it may or may not be diminishing in relative value, but at the time, there's a competitive advantage there. So the Pirates bought into Martin's glove, but it also turns out he's a really interesting guy. As I mentioned earlier, he's one of the more cultured players you'll find at a major league clubhouse, and he was also willing to experiment with... I felt he was good for the clubhouse dynamic beyond him being an interesting person. He was willing to try the... some wearable technology. I think it was going into the 2014 season, the Zephyr bioharness, which was worn under jerseys and during workouts, which showed players their calorie energy consumption and it quantified what they could their calories burn, so they could better plan their diet. And he was always at the the controls of the clubhouse sound system, and he literally kept the beat of the clubhouse. And he's just an interesting guy who I thought added value not through only his on-field play, but through being an interesting and good teammate, willing to experiment with things. Hap I know less well because he was only there for a few months, but those are my Blue Jays connections. And
no, but wait, with regard to Russ Martin, as a clubhouse leader, as someone who's willing to experiment, I know that for Fangraphs, you've written about other players who serve as, to some degree, stewards of the game and of experimentation, and who themselves have been able not only to transfer themselves, but have some way brought a sort of contagious enthusiasm for that sort of thing. You've covered, I think, to some degree, Daniel Murphy with the Washington Nationals. You've certainly spoken with Justin Turner he's sort of one of these. He's like a half coach almost. He's embedded, and I think that maybe he had spoken with Corey Seager or Cody Bellinger or some of the club's younger players. Maybe Yasiel Puig. He had certain influence on him to try lifting the ball. Did you have a sense? You sort of gestured towards it, but do you have a sense that Russell Martin communicated anything, if maybe more specific than a spirit of curiosity to the club? Maybe anything particular that you came across?
Well, I think to your point, I do think there's a value in having curious players, especially in this day and age where we have all this information, and StatCast has given us long shangle and all sorts of other things that can inform players on how to improve themselves. But it also helps to have like something of a trailblazer willing to experiment with things in a clubhouse or teach. And, you know, after I saw Martin wearing this wearable technology, and it's very conspicuous because it's like a medallion that attaches to the center of your compression shirt they wear, and it's blinking green, so it's hard to not notice this in the clubhouse. But after Martin began wearing this, over the next year, I think a third of the team had begun using this, and he was the first one, and he espoused its benefits, and he likes to eat. He claimed it kept him a little trimmer by the end of the season. I think that's what you're alluding to. And
yeah, of course.
Yeah. That's a benefit of there's a value in having a curious, thoughtful player in a clubhouse that goes beyond whatever performance we can track on Fangraphs leaderboards and elsewhere. So, yeah, I really do think a player like Martin or Justin Turner or Daniel Murphy, they add value to a clubhouse in ways that, some ways I think you could probably measure, and other ways you can't. More difficult.
Right. Now let's turn to the team itself. Obviously, the 2017 campaign was not a particularly successful one. The Blue Jays entered it with some legitimate stars on the team, and stars who were paid like stars. Donaldson, Martin himself, Troy Tulowitzki were all paid, I think, $20 million or more. And some of them were not the sort of players who were easily moved in a trade. So the club was sort of stuck with them. Those players remain with the team. The club has found itself, it seems, in a somewhat interesting situation where they have actually talented players who are being compensated like actually talented players. But they also won. They're also coming off of, what was a 76-win season, which, in a division featuring the Red Sox, a really frightening Yankees team, and then, in the Rays and the Orioles, perhaps something less than imposing but still competent, it's a daunting situation to be in. So I'm curious, could you please sort of maybe characterize what the circumstances facing the club as they entered the offseason?
Yeah, the Blue Jays were in, I thought, kind of a difficult spot, as you outlined, entering the offseason, where the Yankees look like an emerging, or I guess they did emerge as something of a super team last year and appeared to only strengthen themselves. And you look ahead to next offseason, a lot of people anticipate Bryce Harper or Manny Machado will end up there. The Red Sox are one of the most formidable teams on on paper again and in our projections. And that's a tough neighborhood to reside on, at least in the short term. So they were, I know in Fangraphs chats, I was getting a lot of questions earlier this offseason on what should the Blue Jays do? Should they rebuild? Should they try to go for it? What should they do with Donaldson? Should they try to move him or build around him one more season? So I was getting a lot of questions like that. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays have handled this. I thought they're in a tough spot, but I think the front office has done a good job of improving the 2018 outlook without really sacrificing any significant future parts.
There seem to be a dwindling number of teams in the kind of situation that the Blue Jays find themselves in. Like there are as you use this term, super teams, and that describes teams like the Yankees, you know, probably the Cubs, the Dodgers, a select few others. And then there are a lot of rebuilding teams, even clubs that have traditionally had success. I mean, the Philadelphia Phillies, certainly, I think they have one of the lowest, if not the lowest, payroll. But they have been among the top three or five payrolls in the past, right? The Houston Astros obviously had a lot of success tanking. It came back and won the World Series last year. The Chicago Cubs did something very similar. There's a lot of teams that are willingly losing games in order to rebuild. And there are there's definitely a distinct population of teams that are at the very height of things. The Blue Jays are part of a class of teams in the middle. You mentioned they had some hard decisions to make. Can you sort of talk about this class of teams and, you know, if there are any others maybe that are faced the same predicament, how they've handled it, what is the best way to deal with it?
Right. You know, last year there were eight teams that posted run differentials of 100 runs or better, really 117 runs or better. And there were, let's see, six teams that were 114 runs differential in a negative or worse. So that speaks to this landscape increasingly of super teams or teams in extreme tank mode with the hope of becoming super teams. And then there's this group in the middle that has to make a decision on which pathway do they want to go down. Do they want to try to contend for a coin flip wild card game? Do they want to go into rebuild / tank mode? And the Blue Jays were, I would say, fairly, and we could roughly define them as one of those teams in a class like the Brewers and the Twins, maybe the Rockies and the Cardinals, maybe even the Rays. And we've seen some of these teams take different approaches. The Brewers, I think, have been pretty aggressive in adding Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain and improving their outlook. The Twins have added some bullpen pieces. And the Blue Jays, I think, have also been wise, like the Brewers and the Twins and the Angels in adding Zach Cozart and Ohtani to bet on themselves and improve with the hope of... because that second wild card spot could be a pretty wide-open race, and the Blue Jays are by our... I'm sure you'll want to get more into this, but we have them at about 87 wins right now in our Fangraphs projection, and owners of the second wild card. And they've improved, and they own that position right now because they've improved themselves over the offseason, as our colleague Craig Edwards has kind of defined the Blue Jays offseason as sneaky good. And you look at the Jaime Garcia signing, the Curtis Granderson addition, and Solarte, who I know you like quite a bit, and you'll probably address later. They've added a bunch of short-term upgrades that I think really helped them in 2018 in making a push for a wild card spot or more without, you know, damage. They still have two of the best prospects in all of baseball, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, and those guys aren't going anywhere. But they've kept the future, the bright future intact without trading any of it, and they've enhanced their chances for 2018. And I really believe too many teams are zigging away from trying to be competitive in 2018 for a variety of reasons. And the Blue Jays have been one of the teams fewer number to zag when others are zigging and actually try to win games in 2018. Winning baseball games in 2018 is a market inefficiency.
so, and I, so, So yeah, let's discuss some of the specifics. Now, I thought you characterized they're essentially the conundrum, the problem facing them rather well, which is an attempt they see an opportunity to compete. And of course, if you have a player like Josh Donaldson on the roster, who is, you know, a perennial MVP candidate in particular, if he remains healthy for 150 or so games, the club, between that and their, you know, sort of large financial commitments to players who remain good, if not great, like Tulowitzki and Russell Martin, in a reasonably strong starting rotation, although one that certainly contended with injuries last year, they had this opportunity to compete, but they would not want to mortgage the future. And they appear to, as you've begun to suggest, really nail it in terms of acquiring talent at modest prices, whether it be in terms of actual free agent dollars or if it's in terms of the cost of a trade. They appear to have acquired talent which can modestly help the team, which addresses some of the weaknesses, and furthermore, which allows them, gains wins for them, for 2018 season in a difficult, but not insurmountable pursuit of the second wild card. Coming into the season, let's start with the corner outfielders. The corner outfield was pretty weak for the team. I think they had some combination of probably Steve Pierce in left field and maybe Teoscar Hernandez in right field or something like that. But they actually did a pretty good job. By one means, it was Curtis Granderson, I think, which is $5 million. The other was Randall Grichuk in a modest deal with the Cardinals. What's your sense of those deals? What do they mean for the team?
Yeah, going into the offseason, corner outfield was appeared to be a significant problem. And I love the Granderson ad. This is, we've heard a lot about fly balls and launch angles and ground balls suck over the last couple of years. But Granderson's always been a fly ball guy. He's always been able to get the ball in the air. He has power to the poolside. And I love that skill set in Toronto and in the AL East in general. You want to get the ball in the air because there's a lot of smaller ballparks. He can fit a platoon there. If those guys are healthy, I like a Granderson-Steve Pierce platoon in left field. Pierce is kind of like the right-handed version, in some ways, of Granderson. I think they'll get a lot of, with health, they'll get a lot of offensive production out of that spot. Right field, another problem area going into the offseason. And Grichuk is sort of like a Stanton light when you look at the stat cast data, the exit velocity and all
that's
that.
Very 1% light. Of Stanton. yeah, but that's still like praise. If you are compelled to utter the word Stanton, there's some sort of praise there, you know?
Yeah, if he could just find a way to more often contact the ball and maybe increase the walk rate a little bit. He has rare offensive, rare power. He can put on a rare batting practice show. There's no question about that. And he plays a capable defense, I think. And he could probably play any outfield spot. So there's some versatility there. And, there's maybe some offensive upside there if he can just reduce his K rate by a few ticks, increase his walk rate, have some more batted ball events. For the cost, I like that. I think they upgraded their outfield, again, at a relatively low cost. They've had a sneaky good offseason, particularly in the outfield.
They also acquired Yandervis Solarte, and this was in what was for them sort of a low profile move, but they were able to acquire Solarte, and it's interesting because he does not have necessarily a definitive starting spot. Tulowitzki is a shortstop. Devin Travis is the nominal starter at second base, I guess. And of course, Donaldson's over at third. And yet, there does not appear to be, if I guess last year is any indication, there probably will be opportunities for him to play, whether it's resting players, injury, et cetera. And I will begin by asserting, I think Yandervis Solarte is a really interesting player. I'm probably, I don't know if I'm more enthusiastic about him than you are, but he has consistently been, you know, within earshot, at least, of shouting distance, I should say, of average while playing for the Padres. Of course, he has not cost a lot of money. He's still team controlled. I don't know. Are you a fan of Solarte at all?
I am. You might be founding the Solarte Appreciation Society.
Yeah. We're discussing it previously. He falls for me under that maybe category of the David Freese type player, a younger version of Freese at this point. He's not known for his defense, but he can man third base. In this case, is probably the position at which he's been deployed most often. But I think he can handle second as well, and of course, any number of other positions that aren't shortstop. And offensively, he's not exceptional in any way, really. Except he does make quite a bit of contact, which in this particular era, which has been defined essentially by pitchers missing bats because of increased velocity and ability to throw at max effort in shorter stints, his ability to make contact is becoming more and more rare. So if it's not necessarily in Jervis Solarte fan club, it's definitely this sort of player whose skills appears to possess one of the exact skill sets that's most likely to be overlooked relative to its value, is how I would phrase it.
Yeah, I really like the player too. And look, he has a 106 career weighted runs created plus. That's pretty good for a guy who can play about every infield position. And he's been average to above average in four consecutive seasons. And I like the fact that in addition to all the skills you mentioned, he gives you the ability to rest starters without losing anything if you consider him a super sub. Or utility player. And where teams have become more interested in injury prevention and maximizing player efficiency on the field, whether it be the NBA, Major League Baseball, or the NFL, or NHL. And he allows a manager to have confidence that he can spell a Donaldson or, even a Tulowitzki for a game or two. And we're not going to lose anything. This is an above-average bat. Can play him anywhere in the infield. Could probably play him anywhere but pitcher and catcher if I had to in the entire defensive spectrum. I really like this ad. I think it not only bolsters depth, but better allows the Blue Jays not to wear out starters by July. So I think, again, another really good sneaky pickup that who will add value in a number of ways.
And finally, I think probably another part of this relevant to this offseason is the acquisition of Aledmys Diaz, also from the St. Louis Cardinals, just like Randall Grichuk. The Diaz acquisition, of course, is relevant because Troy Tulowitzki has had problems staying on the field, and in fact appears as though he will not be in the opening day lineup, at least. He's been rehabbing from a severe ankle injury that he suffered last July. I believe he's also dealing with bone spurs this spring. Could you just briefly characterize what sort of player Aledmys Diaz is?
First, as you mentioned with Tulowitzki, I mean, we can't really expect him to be on the field for 162 games, can we?
No, he hasn't done it for some time, yeah.
When's the last time Tulowitzki played? Let's see.
Let
me pull up his player page. Here we are. He hasn't played more than 131 games since 2011. So you need depth at shortstop. And the Blue Jays obviously know that too. And that's one reason why Diaz was added. And, Cardinals offensively, not a standout year, but for his career, covered 190 games, he has been an above-average offensive player. For his career, and he gives club much needed depth. He's another, like Solarte, he's a contact guy in the zero of high strikeouts. I think they have an above average number two shortstop who could end up playing a lot of who could up be, end up being more than that. And behind him, you have Solarte as kind of an emergency shortstop too. So, yeah, I understand why they would. They were, I believe, thinking correctly and prioritizing shortstop and infield depth, given the injury history at the top of the depth chart.
Yes. Now, we've made our way to the end of the program. I have not had an opportunity to discuss. I usually take the opportunity to discuss one Blue Jays prospect. I will simply state that Danny Jansen, who was the subject of this my prospect moment, essentially, many times last year, actually made his way onto the top 100 list for Fangraphs, composed by Kyle McDaniel and Eric Longenhagen. He appeared 71st on that list. And he also appeared on what is known as Cato, which is essentially a prospect projection system that was put together by Chris Mitchell, who has now moved on to the even more private sector, not unlike Dave Cameron. but Jansen appeared 51st there. Danny Jansen's future, for the moment, looks bright. I'll probably discuss Danny Jansen and other prospects in greater depth. Last week, I cannot confirm, but I believe that there will be a prospect, a prospect analyst of some sort who will be complimenting your own appearances here on Pitch Talks Audio. So allow me to say, Travis Sochek, thank you for your debut appearance. I think you did an excellent job. Thank you for appearing on the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I'm very, very happy to be part of this.
Okay. That has been Fangraphs' Travis Sochek. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.